from Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call, 800-462-7413. And of course, along with your call, some topics to talk over. Tell us, Zorba.
We're going to talk about healthy countries and what are the top 10, kind of like David Letterman's top 10.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It's Zorba's top 10, but we're going to talk about who the healthiest countries in the world are and what that means to us.
And?
FDA is investigating the safety claims of homeopathic remedies. Homeopathic remedies. We'll talk about what homeopathy is and why the FDA is looking at this and kind of my slant on it.
Coming up later. What's our recipe?
Ah, Zorba's Zesty Salsa.
Zorba's Salsa.
Hola! It's salsa time.
Coming up in just a bit. 800-462-7413. Zorba, let's get to work. A listener with us now in Chanute, Kansas. Hi.
Hello. I have an ongoing problem. Oh, it's been probably 5 or 6 years that whenever I get in water, like take a shower, take a bath, go swimming, which I can't do those because my skin turns bright red and it itches for like an hour.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to different dermatologists, different doctors. They put me on different allergy medicines, which does nothing. Mm-hmm. I've had a couple of shots, does nothing. And lately, even when I do dishes, my skin itches. If I sweat, my skin itches.
So you've gone to a number of dermatologists, others, and they've tried a whole bunch of different things, right?
Right.
And nothing has seemed to work. Let's go through a few things. Antihistamines have not worked for you, right or wrong?
That's correct.
Okay, and you've taken oral steroids also? What are the doctors?
And the cream. I put cream on.
Uh-huh. What do the doctors say is going on, by the way? Do they have any idea?
They don't know.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know.
Okay, so first of all, itching is a big issue. We all itch, and we know that when we scratch, we want to scratch more. And when we're told not to scratch, we want to really scratch more. I mean, it's sort of a natural thing that your brain goes to. And one recommendation that you might try is a couple of different things, and that's forgetting the itch, forgetting the fact that you've got a sensation coming from your body somewhere. We don't know what causes it. You know, you just have this. Maybe attacking the mental aspect of the itch might help. And I've got two suggestions on what may work. You're not depressed. You're not anxious. But sometimes antidepressant and anti-anxiety pills will actually make a difference. So the first recommendation is to consider trying an anti-anxiety pill called Risperidone. Now, Risperidone in low doses is used in anxiety syndromes. People have anxiety. And what I think I would try is a teeny tiny dose of Risperidone and see if that works. And that would be a half a milligram or a quarter of a milligram every day. And I tried that for 3 to 4 weeks, see if that works. That's what I would do, the tiniest dose. They come in low doses. You're going to take half the lowest dose possible.
Okay.
And see whether or not this stops the mental sensation of the itch. That's the goal. Now, let's assume for a minute that it works. If it works, I would stay on it for 3 months. Then I would take it every other day. Then I would take it twice a week, and then I would stop it. I don't think you have to take it forever. You've got to stop that thought of the itch, because I think that's part of what's driving this. You may have a sensation on your skin, but the thought of the itch, because as I'm talking to you, I want to itch under my arm, and I want to itch here. And I mean, and I wasn't itchy before I started to talk to you, but all of a sudden I noticed the itchiness, and if I ignore it, it will go away. But you can't ignore things when you're thinking about it. That's not how the brain works. And Risperidone is a great drug to try for that, because it's given in anxiety syndromes, which you don't have, but you probably have a variation of that. See what happens with that.
Okay. Yeah, I look like a flamingo, when I get in the water.
Yeah, well, you may still be red when you get in the water, but I think your initial goal is, can you take a shower, short shower, 2 to 3 minutes or 3 to 5 minutes and feel good afterwards using a soap, of course, which is a non-itchy soap such as Dove. But you've gone through Dove, Aveeno soap, Alpha Carry soap, all of those things that the dermatologists have give you. Pay attention to, especially the oily. But the risperidol, you've got to get it from your doctor, is to stop the mental component. Try that. Let us know.
I certainly will, and thank you so much for taking this, because this has been ongoing for years.
Well, thank you. Good luck with it.
Our pleasure.
Thank you so much for the call. As we talk, my neck starts to
itch. As soon as you start itching, we start to itch.
I didn't bring it up while we were talking with the listener, but when I have itchy problems, but it's dry skin problems. And that's all. It's kind of the opposite of what she has.
Yeah. Well, she's gone to a lot of doctors. She said dermatologists. She said steroids.
Well, no, no,
she's
an
antihistamine.
I'm saying that this isn't helping her any.
Yeah. But dry skin is a common reason people.
Yeah, and I just get the moisturizer.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, but how often do you shower?
What's our number?
800- What's our number? That's right. We're getting a memory disturbance.
7413. Let's get back to the phones. A listener now in Norman, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Fine. How can we help?
Well, I was curious about ACV, apple cider vinegar.
Oh, apple cider vinegar. I have never heard apple cider vinegar give the moniker of ACV. It must have reached a new...
He's just trying to confuse us.
Yeah, that's right. Well, no, it's texting. That's what it is. We're a texting society.
You know,
ACV, apple cider. Who wants to write that out when you're texting someone soon?
Exactly. Well, I was just kind of curious. I'm a fairly healthy individual in my early 60s, but I've been taking ACV for a long time, and I don't know whether it's contributing to my good health or it's not. And I didn't know what I've been on the internet and read some of the material on it, and it doesn't look like it does any harm, but I don't know that there's any scientific evidence that it actually improves health either. And I was just kind of curious.
Vinegar does no harm. I use vinegar when I put salad dressing on. I use vinegar all the time. So vinegar, it's a food. So this started out with a guy who wrote a book called Folk Medicine in Vermont, and he wrote it back in the 50s. And he wrote about the importance of apple cider vinegar in good health. It would stop heart disease, stroke, cancer. And, of course, in those days, there was, a lot of heart disease, stroke, and cancer. And the book caught on. It became a best-selling book. Mm-hmm. Sold like 1 million, 2 million copies, soft cover book. So then he started manufacturing something called Honeygar. And Honeygar was honey and apple cider vinegar. And so he was making a ton of money. He was selling the Honeygar, and he had the book. And then the FDA said, you can't do that. In other words, if you're selling something and you've written a book on it, then you have to prove it actually has worth. You can sell it and not do the book. Or you can do the book and sell it, but you can't sell it in the book because he claimed it stopped cancer. In other words, there are certain claims you can do. So in the end, he had a cease and desist. So he stopped selling the Honeygar, and then he went on the road as a lecturer and made even more money lecturing about apple cider vinegar. And then he died. He died like, I don't know, it is not very old, like 55, 60 or 65. So then his book went away for a number of years because he was dead. He wasn't promoting his book.
Right.
And then it resurfaced again in the 60s, and it has seen a new resurgence in the 2000s again. I think it's about every 10, 15 years people like it. It doesn't do any harm at all. Does it do any good? There is zero scientific evidence. But I have a lot of patients who say, I take a teaspoon of it every morning or a tablespoonful and I feel great. And you know what I say? Keep it up. Keep on using it. Do you smoke cigarettes?
No.
That's contributing to good health. Do you exercise?
Yes, just about every day. About a mile and a half to 2 miles a day.
Well, that's great. That's contributing to good health. How's your diet?
Well, I'm vegetarian and have been since 1985.
Well,
so,
that's contributing to your good health. So I think you have three other reasons that you're in good health besides the apple cider vinegar. So keep up the apple cider vinegar, but don't give up the other things. Do not start smoking. Keep exercising and eating right, and I think you'll live to be 100.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you taking my call.
Yeah, sure. We appreciate the call. And this is almost as though we planned this show.
Oh, yes.
We talk now, Zorba, about the healthiest countries in the
world. Okay. Now, I was shocked when I looked at this list. What is the healthiest country in the world?
The United States.
Yeah, right. That's right. No, we're like number 23. We are not the healthiest country. You know, with all the hubbub of politics concerning healthcare, the bottom line is we're like number 13 or 23. Yeah. I don't care which care you use.
I don't have a clue as to which.
Australia turns out to be number 10.
Yeah.
Number one is Qatar, which I pronounce Qatar, which is wrong. Q-U-A-T-A-R. Q-A-T-A-R. Yeah. I'm used to the U that Miss Schutte said always has to be there.
Yeah.
Well, it's very interesting. They looked at life expectancy, infant mortality, health expenditure, and everything. What they don't look in Qatar is the fact that most of the workers in the country come from Pakistan, Nepal, and other places. And the people in Qatar have a lot of money, and there are not a lot of people in Qatar.
Yeah.
But let's look at other people. Norway. Norway is number two. They're right up there. Norway has a life expectancy of 79 and a half years. It's number two. Switzerland is number three. Notice there's a similarity here. It has a lot to do, really, with health expenditure. It actually has a lot to do with the unemployment rate. That's a big issue.
That's interesting, yeah.
Singapore is right up there, and Australia's up there as number 10. So I think if you look at all of these together, you see that a lot of it has to do with the health expenditure, but it also has to do with unemployment. It's very interesting. Unemployment in Australia is 57.5. So that has to do with how the government is doing. So can we blend this all together and see how we can apply this to the United States of America? I've got the answer on how to move us up to the number one slot. Ready?
Yeah, ready.
Number one, get rid of unemployment.
Okay.
We can do that if we really try, right?
Piece of cake.
Get rid of unemployment. Number two. Get rid of food deserts. Make sure that you have good food all over, not just in areas where people have enough money to spend, because you're getting rid of unemployment.
No.
Get rid of food desert, okay?
No.
I've got a couple more things.
Okay. Right.
Number three, exercise every day. Put that in the middle of the workplace. You know, have like 10 minutes like they do in Japan of exercising every single day. And number four, immunize everyone. Because if you look at these combinations, it turns out their immunization rates, although it's not in this particular report, are super high. And as you know, our immunization rates are not as high as they could.
I'm looking over the list here.
Yeah.
Australia, 10. Sweden, 9.
Yeah,
Singapore, 8.
Yeah. You see a pattern here?
What I don't see is exercise and diet, and I'm not sure the diet would be the same or just as good in one of these countries as another.
Yeah. The Norwegians are not known for their diet, right?
Yeah.
How about the Swiss? Are they known for their diet?
I don't know, but doesn't this kind of go against what we always say? The diet and exercise will make
Know when things go against what we say. Do you know what we do with the study?
Ignore it.
We take the study, we roll it up in a piece of paper, and we move on. That's what we do. Next call.
800-462-7413. El Paso, Texas. Hi.
Hello there, Dr. Z and Mr. T.
How can we help?
I recently had surgery. I had some aneurysms taken care of, and my son, who's a cardiac nurse in Midland, I'm from El Paso, about 600 miles away, came down and spent some time with us, and he told me about some of the things that I had to watch out for, and one of them was blood thinners. So Dad, you might be on a blood thinner for the rest of your life. You have to find out how much it is, what kind it is, and so forth and so on. So anyway, after the surgery, I was walking, and I had a little scab on my forearm, which happened to come off, and it started bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
So my wife put a tape, a Band-Aid on it, and I thought nothing of it. But about 20 minutes later, the blood was coming right through the Band-Aid. I said, my God. So I put a compress on there.
Uh-huh.
From 3 o'clock in the afternoon till 6 o'clock in the afternoon, I took it off at 6, and it was still bleeding.
Oh, uh-huh.
So I put another compress up on it, but this time was something that wouldn't stick to the scab. And I took it off in the next morning, and it stopped. So my question, I realized that any cut could really affect me greatly. I had to be very, very careful.
Yeah, you do. You do. What are you on a blood thinner for now?
I had surgery. I had some aneurysms taken care of. The doctor put in 8 stents in me.
Okay.
And he gave me some Plavix.
Yeah, Plavix. Okay,
yeah.
Plavix. Uh-huh. Which is kind of like a blood thinner, you would call that. So it's not like Coumadin, but it does help. It keeps the blood from clotting as well. And you're right. You know, so there are benefits and there are pros and cons. And after you have a stent put in, we often put people on Plavix for life because we don't want the stent to clog. The side effect is when you open your skin and bruise your skin, the blood is not going to clot there either. And so the answer is to go. Well, there are a couple of answers. First of all, you want to put any cut, you want to put on a Telfa or non-adherent Band-Aid on the top of it. That's important because otherwise, when you pull it off, it's going to start bleeding again. And you want to put, if it's around, a little antibiotic ointment. And you want to keep these Band-Aids all around. You want to put them in your car, in your house, in the knife drawer. Just put them all around because when you cut yourself, you can't find the damn thing. I mean, we have Band-Aids in our house, and I'll cut myself, and I'll say, where's the Band-Aid? And I put it away somewhere. My wife may have put it away, but I never know where it is. So you want to get a couple of boxes and place them all over, and I'm serious, so that as soon as you cut yourself, you can put it on.
Right.
And then you've got to leave it on. You know, normally you could leave on a Band-Aid for 20, 30 minutes and a clot forms. But if you're on Plavix, it's going to take hours. So you put a Band-Aid on. If it bleeds beyond it, you put on a compression Band-Aid. And you are correct. You have to be careful. That is a side effect. And if you're working in a place where you're likely to be injured or fall, sometimes we have to take people off of Plavix because of that side effect. So what did your wife say? Your wife said that you should be careful with this?
Yeah, my son, who's a cardiac nurse in Midland, by the way, he just won a Daisy Award. I'm very proud of him.
Ooh, congratulations. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. You're wonderful. Good kid. Anyway. He came down and spent some time with me and told me some of the things to watch out for, some of the things to do, not to do. And he was a big, big help.
Yeah.
And
That's why we have children, right? So they can
the
help us.
To have children.
That's the only reason.
I
so
knew
they
there
can
was
help
a reason.
Us. Just searching.
Just kidding, Eden.
That's funny.
I brought you in this world. I can take you out unless you help me.
That's exactly it. Well, pay attention to your children's advice. That's what I always say.
That's the truth.
Well, thanks for your call. Good luck. Get those Band-Aids. Buy a bunch of boxes and place them all over the house. That's my recommendation.
Dr. Z, Mr. T, thank you very much. You've got a wonderful program.
Aren't you nice? Thank you so much for the call. And before we take a break...
Wait a minute, your comment. I knew there was some reason to have children.
Before we take a break, let's take an email question from a listener who calls herself a concerned grandma. She writes, Dear Dr. Pastor, my adolescent grandson was diagnosed with a gluten sensitivity by a naturopath on the basis of a fecal test. He also had a total dairy allergy diagnosed by a kinesiologist. By total, I mean even butter. There is no celiac disease in the family. The severely restrictive diet he's now on alleges to help behavioral issues that I've never seen. Is there any data supporting any of this, or is this just a bunch of malarkey?
Quack, quack, quack. That's the short answer.
I thought when I read that first sentence, I've never seen a sentence like this. My adolescent grandson was diagnosed with a gluten sensitivity by a naturopath on the basis of a fecal test.
Yeah, it's garbage. Garbage. You cannot diagnose it on a fecal test. And there is so many people who do not have a gluten allergy who think they have a gluten allergy. Gluten allergies are hot. I predict in 10 years there will be another allergy. So here it is. He's got a naturopath who said he should be on a gluten allergy, that he has gluten allergy. Then a kinesiologist who says he has a milk allergy, neither of which are necessarily trained to discover this, and to change a behavior problem that doesn't exist. Quack, quack, quack. Doesn't it? You cannot diagnose a gluten allergy that way. You do it, first of all, with a blood test to see if you really have celiac disease. You can do it with a biopsy of the small intestine to see if you really have it. So there's no way of doing it. And a lot of people feel better on a gluten-free diet. Well, you can try that and see. But all of a sudden, the kid isn't having milk and dairy products and ice cream, and he's 15, and he can't have pizza. And, you know, it would be a horrible life. And you know what? That will produce a behavioral change. Change that will be terrible. No, no. Tell him to go see a regular doctor, and if he has a intestinal problem to tell him what it is. But if not, stop seeing these quacks.
Yeah, this is a withered grandma who really knows what you
just clearly,
said.
Yeah, clearly. Here's a 15-year-old. You know, this is the problem, is all of a sudden you have a highly restricted diet, you know, where you can't eat certain things. If you look at what he can eat bacon. Bacon, mutton, steaks, high protein foods. That's what it is. Animal fat. But it's too much.
Anyway, have a tough question? Just send it to Zorba. He's always a glutton for punishment.
Just
send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org. You know what? When you said a glutton for punishment, before you know it, you're going to have the pronunciation police on your tail.
Oh, no. Everybody gets the. Yeah. Our recipe is coming up. No gluten in the recipe.
No.
We have more of your calls, of course, our medical mythbuster, and some more of your emails. All right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413, the number to call. We have a line open for you if you'd like to call us now. But before our next call, Zorba, our recipe for Zorba's zesty salsa.
That's right. You like the word salsa, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
We're going to coin it. Before you know it, people are going to say salsa, salsa, salsa. That's what they're going to say to us. In fact, a dance. There's the salsa dance. What do you think?
That's great. I love it.
It's great. Now we just have to get people to invent it. Okay. Start out with red pepper. One red pepper cut into 1-inch pieces.
A red pepper cut into 1-inch pieces.
Now, can you taste the difference between a red pepper and a green pepper?
No.
It actually is a little sweeter. It's sweeter. Yeah, it is. It is sweeter. It's slightly sweeter. I like it.
And yeah, I guess thinking about it, I believe you on that.
Yeah, yeah. It's slightly different. You believe me on that?
Yes.
I'll tell you some more stories if you want to believe that.
That's not a one-time thing.
Introduction to other belief systems. Okay. 2 tablespoonfuls of extra virgin olive oil.
2 big T, extra virgin olive oil.
It's the only kind that I use. Wonder why they made it extra virgin. You know, why didn't they just call it virgin? I mean, I know there's a difference. No, there is. And the extra virgin is really the first pressing of the olive oil. But, you know, when they...
Could they go and get an extra, extra virgin?
Yeah, you know, I'm sure somebody has invented an extra, extra virgin.
Okay.
You know. A tablespoonful of plum tomatoes halved.
Big T plum tomatoes halved.
And they have a thicker... pulp, but I think it is called a pulp. But, you know, it's a thicker pulp and there's less liquid inside a plum tomato.
Okay.
I'm sure that there are, if I go to a website somewhere, I can find out what it is, but it's the pulp.
Yeah.
4 scallions cut into 2-inch pieces.
4 scallions cut into 2-inch pieces.
2 jalapeno peppers halved and seeded.
2 jalapeno peppers halved and seeded.
Now, you know, I always warn people, the inside of the pepper and the seeds contain the capsaicin, which is really the hottest thing. When you seed them, after you seed them, wash your hands, because if you do as I have done and you itch your eyes, you will be unhappy.
Yeah.
I always talk about it. Some kosher salt.
Kosher salt.
Ground black pepper.
Ground black pepper.
Now, you have a pepper grinder in your house, don't you?
No.
You don't have a pepper grinder? You use pepper?
Well, we never cook anything, so what would we use?
You never cook anything?
What would we use pepper
You order out breakfast? No, you don't order out breakfast.
No, you know what? I eat breakfast. Both of us eat breakfast without any cooking
involved. Without any cooking. You never have eggs?
Juice, cereal.
No eggs?
Juice, cereal.
No eggs? You have eggs in the refrigerator?
Muffin, bran muffin.
That's it. No eggs. How about lunch? I know what you have for lunch.
Let's not go through this. Let's get back to our recipe.
Anyway, you need a pepper grinder. I'm getting you that for Christmas. Next year for Christmas.
There's room on the shelf, I guess.
pepper grinder. Oh, there's lots of room in the shop. I just bought a new pepper grinder, really nice one, you know, that really grounds the pepper really well to be able to use it. And
don't they all do that?
No, but some are harder to use than others. Can we put a pepper grinder up on the website? I'm asking Carl a question. Carl, can we put a pepper grinder up on the website, my new favorite pepper grinder?
We can put a picture of a pepper grinder.
We're going to put on the pepper grinder. Okay, it's about $20, and it's well worth it.
Okay.
For anyone who cooks, I recommend this pepper grinder, and I don't get a penny out of it.
We're out of time for our recipe.
Take
our next call.
Okay, 1.5 cups of fresh cilantro.
Cup and a half fresh cilantro.
If you don't like cilantro, use parsley.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, use parsley. Some people like them. The world is divided into cilantro likers and cilantro haters. That's how I do. 3 tablespoons of fresh lime juice. Do not use reconstituted.
3 big tea fresh lime juice.
Okay. Here we go. Heat the broiler on a large broiler-proof rimmed baking sheet. In other words, you can do it in a pan.
Mm-hmm.
Toss the pepper with the oil and broil for about 2 minutes. So it's going to get a nice sort of black coating on it. Then add the tomatoes, scallions, jalapenos, season with a half teaspoon of kosher salt, pepper, toss it around, and then broil, tossing it again until the vegetables are tender, about 3 to 4 minutes. Then transfer the veggies to a bowl of a food processor. Add the cilantro or parsley, if you wish. Pulse until it's finely chopped. Add the lime juice, pulse to combine. Serve it with chips.
Sounds delicious. Oh, with chips. I was going to say, what do you want to put this on?
You could just use chips.
Something like put on some salmon.
You could put it on, you know what? That is a great idea.
Yeah.
You could put on some broiled salmon. You could do that. You could put it on some boneless, skinless chicken breast.
Yeah.
You know what? You could put it on a piece of toast and have it on a piece of toast.
I don't know if I'd do that.
You wouldn't have it on toast. You would have it on toast. Okay. Well, don't put it on.
Anyway, it
How about
great.
Chips? Would you have it on chips?
Yeah, sure.
You like chips.
Yeah.
You know, maybe with a beer, kick back with a beer, some chips.
You know,
a little, maybe a little Corona with a little lime in the Corona.
Getting me interested.
Anyway, the calories per serving. Yeah. There, I have 10 servings on here, so it's 40 calories a serving. I'd probably eat half of it, is what I would do if I made it. Wonderful. Obviously, not much nutritional value, but it makes you happy.
Exactly.
And happiness is very important when you eat.
Absolutely.
Do you think people will want to have this recipe if they didn't write it down?
If only there was a way for them to do this in case they didn't jot this all down.
Yeah, you know, if they went to ZorbaPastor.org, you could get this recipe, other recipes that are wonderful. That's ZorbaPastor.org. You can also find us through Facebook. And don't forget, I tweet.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. Back to the phones now, Zorba, a listener with us in Norman, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
Well, about 6 months ago, I had some blood work done, and my good cholesterol was pretty low. It was a 28. And then 6 months later, I had the blood work taken again after initiating some lifestyle changes, and it went down to 24, so it hadn't really improved. So I was calling to see what other things I can do to increase my good cholesterol.
Zorba, you will answer him, talk with him, but is 28 or 24 a good cholesterol?
No, number? That's a low HDL.
They're both low.
That's a
yeah.
low good cholesterol.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. And first of all, lifestyle changes, by the way, are very important. So good cholesterol is sort of a marker for health. If your good cholesterol is 100, usually people in the family do not have heart disease. And there are a rare number of people that are high, usually people around 35 or 40.
Mm-hmm.
So the next logical question is, do you have premature heart disease in your family? Grandparents, did they have heart attacks at a young age?
I had a grandfather who had a heart attack.
How old was he?
He was probably in his mid-50s.
Okay, so that's a young age. That's a young age, huh? How about your dad?
My dad doesn't have any heart problems.
Uh-huh. So what happens is that's a marker for that. And so your grandpa had a heart attack in his mid-50s, often HDL cholesterol is a marker. Now, it's what's interesting is that there was a drug to double the good cholesterol by Pfizer. Full disclosure, I actually tested the drug in my office because I've done pharmaceutical studies for a number of years. The HDL was doubled, but it turned out the heart attack rate was also increased. And so that drug, where they spent spent like $1 billion or $500 million to develop Bit the Dust. And there are other drugs that are forthcoming that may also increase the good cholesterol. But you could only increase the good cholesterol that much. In fact, it varies. It varies by about 10 to 20% around the mean. So your mean cholesterol might be 22 or 24. So it's going to go up 4 points, down 4 points. And that's what you're born with. You can't change it much. But the issue is, you don't care about lifestyle changes changing the good cholesterol. You care about lifestyle changes reducing your risk of a heart attack. Keep your eye on the ball. The ball is heart disease. It's not good cholesterol. So what lifestyle changes did you make?
Well, during that kind of 6 month time, I've lost over 25 pounds.
Awesome. Awesome.
A lot more active.
Awesome.
And I'm still continuing down that path.
Fantastic. How'd you lose the weight? What'd you do?
I just started following the Weight Watchers program, so mm-hmm. I started doing that.
Weight Watchers is awesome. I think it's great.
Yeah.
The woman, by the way, died recently, the woman who invented it, and I read all about her. She became quite wealthy, but she invented it, and Weight Watchers has a great program. It's well-balanced food. It's heart-healthy. It helps a tremendous number of people. I highly, highly, highly recommend Weight Watchers for a lot of people. So you made do you smoke cigarettes?
No.
Okay, you don't smoke cigarettes. You've done, as you said, you started exercising more.
Right.
Those are important lifestyle changes. That's going to make a huge difference in your life. Now, you expected and hoped that you would see a change in your HDL cholesterol. And some people do. And if it was reversed, it went up to, you will say, 28, you would say, well, this really made a difference. But let me assure you that this will make a difference in your risk of getting a heart attack. And that's really what matters. If you look at your grandfather, he did not have the benefit of knowing diet, exercise, not smoking, did not have the benefit of those things, and did not have the benefit of good technology, which are cholesterol-lowering drugs if they're necessary, and drugs to control high blood pressure, because they weren't around when he was younger. You've got that benefit, and what's important is because you have a low good cholesterol, you're always going to have a risk factor. Let me assure you that the risk factor of a low cholesterol is just like the risk factor of other things, smoking, diet, and exercise. And what you do is you make your life better, and then this becomes a minor player.
Okay.
You're doing all the right stuff. Your HDL cholesterol may always vary, but you're going to have fewer heart attacks because you made a difference in your lifestyle. And I have a question. What motivated you to do this? Obviously, it was the test, but why did you get the test in the first place?
Well, I just had gone in for a physical. My mm-hmm. kids were young. Like, I have 2 kids under 5 at home, and just trying to be healthier for them. And that was really the motivating factor to kind of change
uh-huh.
my diet and all of those things.
So being around for your children and being healthier for your children was your motivational factor for a lifestyle change.
Right.
Congratulations.
Yeah, pretty nice.
That's the way to go. That's one of the reasons we have kids. It's not just to give us advice when we're older, but it's to make us want to stay around longer. Good work.
Yeah. All right.
Good work.
Thank you, guys.
Sure.
For taking my call.
You're welcome.
We appreciate the call. Thank you. At 800-462-7413. And before the break, Zorba, let's take a quick email question from a loyal listener named Rachel. She writes, "Dear Zorba, we have rampant head lice this year in our school. What are some things parents can do to prevent and treat head lice? Include natural remedies, please."
Well, you know, the traditional treatment for head lice is to shave the head. That's the most natural remedy. And before we had good chemicals for head lice, that's exactly what you would do. You'd go into the school, all the kids would have shaved heads, and then the parents would look at it, and if there were any lice there, any nits they're called, which were on the hair, they would get rid of it. So take your children and shave their heads.
That's a natural remedy.
Fine. That is the most natural remedy. Now, there are other remedies, and there are a whole bunch of remedies that people will undoubtedly let us know, like mayonnaise. You put mayonnaise on your hair, and the lice can't live in mayonnaise. But I can just imagine what that would smell like after a while.
Yeah.
And feel like. Oil, that's another one. Now, I'm not talking about WD-40, but I'm talking about olive oil and cooking oil on the head.
Do those things actually work?
Yeah, well, no, they do. Shaving works the best, actually.
Of course. Yeah.
But short of shaving, you go to the pharmacy, and there are drugs like Nix, and I Xanax and other drugs and talk to the pharmacist because there are a variety of different drugs that you can use. And when I say drugs, I mean they're chemicals. You put it on the head. You follow it as directed. You use a special comb to get rid of the nits. That's what they're called. And they're the little eggs that are on there. And you've got to brush the eggs, the dead eggs, off the hair. You're making sort of a face.
No, I'm like, just listening.
Yeah,
to
just
you.
Listening. But you brush the dead eggs off the hair, and you have to be very vigilant and do it with all the kids in the family. And that's the way to treat it. And if that fails, there are stronger medications, stronger shampoos that you can actually get with from your physician, but that may require a doctor visit. But I'd recommend just shaving the hair off your kids. That's what I would go for. Go for the gold, you know. Then take a family picture and send it out to everyone.
If you have a question for Zorba, maybe a real head scratcher, just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org. And I'm laughing because I'm picturing my family when the kids were younger. If we'd sent out a holiday picture, if they all had shaved heads.
Yeah, you laughed right over my pun.
Sorry, I got the pun.
Oh, good. 800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. We have another interesting piece of research to talk over. More of your calls, of course, our Medical Mythbuster 2, here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. If you have a question for Zorba, the number to call is 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, the FDA investigating the safety of homeopathic remedies.
That's right. So let's look at the history of homeopathy. Mm-hmm. I can do that in less than a minute.
Okay.
But homeopathy and allopathy, I'm an allopathic doctor, started in a very similar time, sort of the end of the 1800s. And there was a homeopathy college in Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia, called Hahnemann. And the idea behind homeopathy was that you don't need to have, we'll say, a milligram or 20 milligrams of the drug. You just need a teeny tiny amount of a natural substance to make a difference. And so it's diluted and diluted and diluted and diluted so much that you actually, when you try to test it in the way that we're testing, it's very hard, if not impossible, to actually pick up. In other words, that dilution is almost one. It's called Avogadro's number. Very, very minimal stuff that's in
it. So tell us what the FDA
is. Well, the FDA is looking at a safety issue because, the efficacy issue, the FDA really can't comment on in many ways because the FDA cannot regulate them just like they can't regulate cosmetics. So, and with the homeopathy pill, they can say this will improve cardiac health, but they can't say cures heart disease. They're not allowed to say that. But what the FDA wonders about is it safe? In other words, what's in the pill and what's in the chemical that you're actually taking? Because there's liquid there, even though there may only be a molecule of this and a molecule of that. What about the liquid itself?
So the FDA can't investigate whether this does any good, but they can investigate if it does anything bad.
That's exactly it, and looking at that. And I think that's a very important thing. I think it's looking, if we look at things such as supplements, and we look at the heavy metals that have been found in some supplements, I think you want to assure that there's safety. And I think the efficacy is an issue that sometimes can't be solved scientifically, and I give respect to complementary medicine. People take it. They say it works for them, especially for allergies and some other things. And I've recommended people sometimes go to a homeopathist. Well, but I think the safety is an important issue.
We don't hear a lot about people getting sick from homeopathy.
No, but if you look at things like Zicam, and Zicam was a homeopathic type remedy which had zinc in it, but it had a larger amount of zinc in it. Some people called it complementary, other homeopathy. But anyway, what they found was that it reduced the sense of smell, and so they had to remove the zinc that was actually in there. Since that time, the FDA has said, well, maybe other things also have side effects. The whole problem is this. Even though you cannot evaluate some of these things scientifically, they may still give you value. But I think you as a consumer are interested in making sure that it's safe. No harm, no foul. And I think that's where the FDA really plays an important role here.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. That's 800-462-7413. Back to the phones now, Zorba. A listener joins from Williamsville, New York. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, I'm interested in getting Dr. Zorba's opinion of concierge medicine, mm-hmm. because I've recently had to change my doctor in order to not pay for this rather exorbitant fee every year.
Concierge medicine is a broad field. Basically, instead of if you come to me as your doctor, mm-hmm. I accept insurance. I may bill Medicare. I'll bill the insurance company, and I'll give you 15 minutes, or I may give you half an hour. Mm-hmm. Concierge medicine is you pay a fee, and this is your fee, and this is your what you're going to have to pay, and you'll get more time. You know, you can call me up often in the daytime, at nighttime. I'll spend an hour with you or 2 hours, as long as it takes. Some may file insurance, but I am not accepting insurance because I'm going to charge you more than insurance, and there's certain Medicare rules and in order to do that. And a number of people are doing this because they want to spend more time with a physician, so they have to
pay
for it.
I don't get it. Is this a monthly fee or a per-visit fee?
Well, let's talk to her. Were you paying a monthly fee, or a yearly fee, or a per-visit fee?
It was going to be a yearly fee of $1,600.
Mm-hmm. So it was $1,600 paid out of pocket. Were they going to file insurance for you, or did you have to file insurance yourself?
I guess I would have to file myself, which
That's
would
right.
only be a very partial payment of
That's
what
right.
that involved.
You would file yourself. But how about lab tests and things? Is that covered by this?
I'm not sure. I didn't go to her seminar because I knew I wasn't going to do this.
Seminar. Notice that? Seminar. Whoa. So in other words, doctors then go out and they have to get a certain number of people to make it pay for themselves. So they hold seminars of why you should pay me $1,600 to be your doctor. And by the way, you'll have to file your own insurance. And we don't cover labs, obviously, with that. And you'll file your own insurance for labs, too. But you can then come to me, and I will give you as much time as you need within certain parameters.
Yeah.
Within certain parameters. And it's become it has become more and more popular with people who want to spend more time. But, you know, you have to look and see how much you're willing to pay. So why were you going to do this?
I wasn't going to do it. It just happened. I changed my doctor. Last year, she said she was accepting new patients,
mm-hmm. okay.
and I needed to get closer to my home because my other doctor was so far away.
Okay.
And so I went with her, and then this year, a year later, she's presenting this new program that I do not want to take advantage of, so I had to change my doctor again.
Right, right. I like the way you said that. A new program that you did not want to take advantage of. That's right. Implying that this really is better and its value. Well, your doctor, what she has decided is she doesn't want to be a primary care doctor and may not, you know, sometimes if you're not in a group, it actually can be difficult to make a living. And so she's gone into concierge medicine, cuts down on the number of visits people make to the office. There are fewer people. You get to know them. I think there's definitely a value to it. Now, we live in Madison, Wisconsin, where we have great medical care. We have physicians, a wonderful, you know, a plethora of physicians here. And you don't see concierge medicine in Madison, Wisconsin very much. You often see it, though, in other cities popping up, especially in big cities. And I think it has a place in medicine, but you got to spend more money. Like you said, $1,600.
Well, if you see the doctor a whole lot, then you're not spending more money. You're spending less
money. Well, you still have to file. That is true. You still, if you have a number of medical problems.
Yeah.
I know people who have left Madison, and because they've been unhappy in other cities, because there's not the same access to medical care that we have in our community, they have gone to concierge physicians. I have a very good friend. They moved to Denver. Then they moved to Boulder. And they said the only way we can get good medical care is this way. And I think that's a reasonable thing. But, of course, they make a good living, and they're willing to spend the extra money. So how are you going to find another doctor? Because obviously she is not going to be the one for you.
Well, I've already found one. And being a former medical person myself, I know what's going on there.
That's a major point. What you just said is the crux of the matter. Being a former medical person yourself, you have the ability to navigate the system. And
yes,
concierge physicians often help us navigate a system, but you've got the knowledge, and that allows you to do it. And I think concierge medicine has a place, but obviously not in your heart.
Yeah, and by the way, Dr. Zorba, I think it's a real treat to be able to talk to you.
Thank you.
The pleasure is all ours. Thank you for the call.
Yes. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And Zorba time again now for our medical myth buster. Today's question is from a listener, Bonita, of Mount Vernon, Illinois. She writes, Dear Dr. Zorba, my friend heard somewhere that if you freeze food, it will have more sodium than fresh food due to some chemical causation. I can believe that commercially frozen food has higher sodium content, but what about if fresh food is frozen at home? Or is this just a myth?
Oh, it's a total myth. It's not true. I mean, you can't, when you freeze food, it doesn't produce salt.
Yeah.
That's not what happens.
Yeah.
Oh, I froze that and it all of a sudden became salty. That's not the case. And frozen food, they often add salt for taste. So they often add it, and you buy low sodium.
Yeah.
And in fact, if you look at vegetables these days, not for the most part, in many cases, they have removed the salt because people don't want salt. They want to be able to salt it themselves. So no, food does not get saltier. Now, if you take leftovers and you freeze them, it might become more concentrated because often water evaporates out of it, and it may taste saltier, but that's
not really saltier.
Yeah. Now, do you have a deep freezer in your basement, Tom?
Yeah, and there's a body there.
Moving on.
Have a myth for Zorba to bust? Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org. That's why you never open it up.
800-462-7413 to another caller, Zorba, a listener in Moore, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi. I have a question on my sister that lives in Midwest City has an unusual, what I think is unusual, tick in her facial features, and it kind of just, she has no function of life. When it hits her, it's real painful, and she can't talk on the phone, she can't do anything, and it's been going on for years. Now, her kids are going to take her to a neurologist now because the medication Tegretol that she is now taking does not seem, I guess she's taken it for so long that the last spell she had lasted almost 2 weeks, and it was very uncomfortable, very severe. I just want some insight to this. I've never really had anything, knowledge of a tick. And she said at one time she learned her grandmother had a tick. And this is not like a tick you find on a dog. It's in your face.
Oh, yes. T-I-C. It's spelled differently. We'll put a connector on our website, by the way, zorbapastor.org, for tick de la rue, because that is the most common thing. It's a tick that occurs very painful in the head, very uncomfortable. And like you said, the medication Tegretol that she was taking was the first drug that's often used for that. And there are other medications, anti-seizure medications, that's what they are in that class, that can be also used if one failed and, the other one made it. Now, I assume she had a neurologist all along that gave her this. Is that the case, but they're bringing her to another one?
Not totally knowledgeable on that. I know that's what her doctor gave her. I was just reading here that this causes severe pain that lasts several seconds. Well, hers lasts like all day.
Well, it could be.
It's in the face, around the lip, the nose, the scalp.
It can last for seconds, or it can last all day, or it comes, and then it comes again, and then it comes again. And so the treatment for that, you could think of it as a nerve that's simply spasming when it doesn't want to. And the thing about tic de la rue, it's the fifth cranial nerve. And that nerve is, when that nerve activates, it's very painful. Think of the tooth that decayed, or the dentist that was using the drill, and the reason why, that pain is mediated by the same nerve, one of the branches of the fifth cranial nerve.
Okay, now that you have talked about the dentist and the dental situation. When she went one time to have a root canal done, after that it triggered that, and it was like 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I just wondered if that could have possibly really triggered that to activate.
Well, it could have. That certainly is a possibility. Things will activate a tic, mm-hmm. you know, will activate tic de la rue. My recommendation, definitely see a neurologist. There are mm-hmm. a variety of other anti-seizure medications that mm-hmm. she should take. Her kids should advocate for her, and it sounds like they're doing that and helping her. People mm-hmm. sometimes don't get the right medical care, and they have to get a second opinion often. There are mm-hmm. many different treatments for this that often can be effective, and cycling onto other medications can help her with this.
Okay.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks for that call at 800-462-7413. Before we head out today, Zorba, let's reach into the virtual mailbag and take an email question from Kathleen in Florida. She writes, "Hello, Dr. Pastor. I love your show. Here is my problem. I baked cookies using a Teflon baking sheet. When they were finished, the cookies had tiny bitty flakes of Teflon on the bottom of them. I ate a few cookies before I noticed the problem. I am diabetic and post-bariatric. Is this a serious problem, eating the Teflon? Should I see my family doc?"
No, it's actually not a serious problem. You know, Teflon is sort of a plasticky material. The issue with Teflon actually is if it's heated up to, I think it's over 500 degrees, something mm-hmm. like that. I did a column on Teflon and the issues with Teflon. And we'll put that column on my website,
okay.
zorbapastor.org. Mm-hmm. Carl will find a connector and I'll find out where that column is and I'll put it in. Because that's a question that comes up all the time. The bits and flakes are not going to bother you, but I highly recommend that if you're going to bake cookies, that you bake it on a regular cookie sheet because it browns better. And when you, if you are going to use Teflon, when you take it off the sheet, look at the cookie before you eat the cookie to see if anything's on it. But I use a regular baking
sheet.
People
used to be, maybe still are, scared of Teflon.
People are always scared about Teflon. That's right. Teflon is scary. Scary stuff makes people's. But I did a whole column on it because I looked it up to see what it was. And the issue actually has to do with when it's super high heated and what chemicals might actually be reduced. And it's more Teflon frying pan. There's a whole anti-Teflon lobby out there. And my thoughts to the anti-Teflon lobby is just don't buy it and it'll be okay. So good luck.
Do you have a potentially sticky question for Zorba? Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org. Or don't forget, you can find us in Facebook or Dr. Zorba. I tweet.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, expecting your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0516Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.